What are you saying, Frank, about your list and how it's bad?
Oh, it's more of a list of like, I've played these enough to be able to talk about them in some capacity. So I don't know that for a lot of these, I can argue the merits of list inclusion, but I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, it should be fun. At the very least, you can populate the bottom 16 through 20 of the list.
All right.
Super Mario All-Stars and Stripes Forever. This is episode 192 of Insert Credit, our 4th of July Independence Day special. This week, to celebrate America's birthday, we've invited some distinctly non-American guests onto the show so we can finally figure out if there are actually any good British video games. I'm Alex Jaffe, and my favorite thing about America is the soundtrack.
I'm Frank Cifaldi. My favorite thing about America is Canada.
I'm Brandon Sheffield. My favorite thing about America, oh man, I'm going to try really hard not to just be snarky and say something terrible about America, because that's what sure comes to mind right away. My favorite thing about America, we have thrift stores. Most places don't have those. Like most places in the world don't have a shop that you can
Brandon,
go into.
In the United Kingdom, we call them charity shops.
You call them charity shops, and they're different and they're crap. They're like, it's only your grandpa, your dead
it
grandpa's
begins.
Pant. And that's
it
all
begins.
That's there.
It begins.
Already starting stuff is...
I wasn't going to do it.
Yeah.
He avoided slamming America by slamming the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
That's true.
A returning guest to the show, Matthew Kumar, is with us.
Yeah. Hi, it's me. It's actually Canada Day as we record this, so I believe, as I'm currently in Canada, I'm legally prohibited from saying anything nice about America, so let's just move on.
All right. Well, to round out our cast this week, we've got guest of the show from ancient times. You know him as the developer of GURP. Bennett Foddy is here.
Only GURP.
Just yeah. GURP.
Hey, everybody. I guess my favorite thing about America is nobody will shame you for playing a video game.
That doesn't sound right.
No, you must not have gone to my middle school.
It's comparatively true. We'll put it that way.
We have the two best kinds of British people here. We have a Scottish person and an Australian person, which is like British but better.
That's extremely not true.
It's a little like saying the best part of America is Canada.
Yeah.
We got all the British games. Like, yeah. That is definitely true about Australia.
So this is going to be one of our famous ranking episodes where this time each of us is going to go through it draft style, where we all pick a game from lists that we wrote prior to the episode, and by introducing each of these games in turn, we're going to argue why they belong on the list and figure out where they belong on the list as we assembled it, and by the end, we'll have a list of 20 games from the British area that may argue for the legitimacy of the region as a viable game producer.
So I have a question.
Yeah?
Do we need to adjust ourselves for PAL timing? Do I need to talk faster?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
It hurts a little more.
If you're listening to this on a podcast catcher that allows you to adjust speeds, let's do it at like 1.25.
How many minutes, Jaffe, do we have to talk?
We have 4 minutes on each question, on each game. But before we go into it, I want to quickly try to figure out what exactly is a British video game.
Oh God, it's a video game made in the United Kingdom.
Is it?
That about sums it up.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that what it is?
For someone who doesn't live in the area, is there a difference between, say, a Scottish video game and a British video game? Or an Irish video game and a British video game?
Well, Ireland is not in Britain.
Yeah, Ireland's not in Britain, so that right. would be the difference, wouldn't it? And Scotland is on, you know, is always going to be part of the British Isles. But yeah, I mean, it's going to come up, considering at least on my list, there are several video games that were developed in Scotland, and we can work out if there's anything different about them as we talk, I suppose.
I guess the main thing is big heads, a lot of animation.
Sure.
Background scroll way too much. All power-ups bounce.
Well, and also just there's a lot of things floating in the air that are rotating that you need to collect.
Yeah.
And the music has a very aggressive, I believe the term is arpeggio.
Yeah, music is like transcendent 90s club music, no matter the era it was made in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all European games, but okay.
It's true.
Maybe we'll start seeing a little more individuality in British games post-Brexit.
I don't know how to apply this. It's sort of a sensory thing, but Every British game to me smells like an ashtray. So I don't know what to do with that information.
I think the question, though, is whether it counts if it's a British person living abroad.
Yeah.
As an Australian living in America, I think my games are Australian games. So I'm going to say yes. I think that counts if the people involved were predominantly British in some sort of way.
Interesting.
Then that's going to inform all their choices and what they're doing.
So it's not about where it was developed, but who developed it.
Right, exactly.
All right.
Are my video games British, considering my last name is one of the biggest towns in England?
No.
I don't think that's how it works.
No. That's not how it works.
Okay. I just thought I'd check.
All right. I'm glad you checked so we can set the record straight.
Yeah, it's important.
So our first drafter is Brandon Sheffield. Brandon, you get to pick the first game on our list.
That's me. Okay. Should I start us off weird or straightforward?
Up to you, baby.
Actually, they're all a little weird. I am going to go with Sonic R.
I didn't think that Sonic R was going to fit into my list, but okay, I'm going to hear you describe it. Yeah.
You didn't know that Brandon Sheffield was going to put Sonic R on this list.
No, I mean, I knew he was going to put Sonic R on his list, but this is exactly what Jaffy was just talking about, which was that Sonic R is a game made by British people, but led by a Japanese creative team. So I didn't put it on my list because I felt it didn't really count. You know, so that's why I'm here. Brandon can explain why it counts.
Yeah, I can. You know, John Burton is the creative director of it and the lead coder. And really, the Japanese influence was like making sure Sonic was okay, like done on model. And Yasuhara did the maps for it. Otherwise, it's pretty British. I mean, you got your Richard Jakes music, all the code, all the creative direction was done by British people. It, like, when you look at the credits, it's predominantly British, except for, like, producer, and Yasuhara. So, it's a British game, Traveler's Tales right on the front, not of the box, but of the game. I think it's good. It's not a great game, but if you learn how to turn corners, and there is a good way, you just have to be drifting and tilting, essentially. It's more tilting than drifting. It's actually a really fun game to play as a racing game, and it's also a fun game to just explore around because there are all these little extra bits in there. And you know, they really can't argue against that music. That music is the cheesiest, coolest thing that ever happened in video games, probably. Also, this is another way in which it's uniquely British, is that it used so many techniques that were considered quote impossible on the Saturn. Like, it really pushed code wise things further into the, like, deep into the metal. I feel like that's a complementary tenet of British games, is that they will take a machine that is perhaps considered underpowered or older or something like that, and they will extract the absolute maximum out of that. And Sonic R does that. So I feel like it deserves a place.
I feel like that is clearly a British game, but on the other hand, it's like you've picked the British game that is most like a Japanese game.
Yeah, I love to cheat.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you're cheating so much as like just it's just like a burn on British games, but that's cool.
That doesn't sound like something we do.
I mean, I like Sonic R a lot, but I do think that like it does feel a bit weak sauce. I think Yasuhara doing the maps really does mix it up. I mean, but I can't argue with that music, and it's a really fun game. So right now, in a list of one game, I wouldn't disqualify it. It's number one with a bullet for me.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, I think when we're ranking, that comes into play is overall Britishness of the game.
I've got more of these, by the way.
I'm going to say that this is a British game because the first sentence of the story summary is that Sonic and Tails are about to take a holiday as opposed to a vacation.
Mm-hmm. Look at that.
There it is.
All right.
Matthew, you're up next.
Well, okay, I'm going to go for one that no one can argue with the Scottishness of. In fact, there is a statue of these characters, Dundee, which, of course, you all know I'm referring to.
Lemmings.
Lemmings!
Yeah, Lemmings has to be on there.
Yeah, Lemmings, yeah. It was a phenomenon, like, at the time. If anyone listening is not familiar with the game, because it has been a while now, you have a bunch of little lemming characters with white faces and green hair and blue bodies that walk about without your ability to control them. You can select them with your cursor and make some of them do certain things, make them blockers, make them diggers, make them little stairway builders, and you have to solve puzzles to get them through to the end of the level. At the time, it was amazing, and I still think it's actually an incredible bit of game design. There's very little to say other than that. I don't know, Bennett, do you have any opinions on this one?
Yeah, Lemmings is the quintessential example of a messy puzzle game, a puzzle game where, you know, execution is difficult and doesn't always work out perfectly because it's all about like where the pixels were after the little guys like destroyed them or drilled through them or whatever. Really one of the true originals of the era, and interesting for that kind of game. It's such a big success. Was never really cloned, which is an interesting thing. There were some things that were a little bit like it, like you can think of like Benefactor or something, which DICE made.
Was there not like Troddlers or something like that?
Troddlers, yeah. Troddlers is related, but it didn't spawn a genre by any means.
It also didn't spawn a franchise, weirdly.
There are like 5 Lemmings games.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah, there's sequels, Lemmings yeah. 2. I like Lemmings 2 a lot, but there's probably too many types of Lemmings. Lemmings 3D is kind of a dark horse, really enjoyable 3D puzzler, but yeah, I think the problem is, like a lot of these games, like the companies didn't survive past a certain point, so they didn't exploit them. For Psygnosis was the one that had it, then it passed through hands, I think ended up with Sony, and Sony just let it die, right? There was I believe there was a Lemmings type game on PSP, but the tragedy of Lemmings is that it's actually really, really good. As Bennett says, it's a messy game where a stray pixel can throw you off completely, but there's something really fun about it, and it was featured in multiple Game Center CX challenges, so it's quite following Japan as well. So that maybe makes you feel nicer about it, Brandon? I don't know.
One thing I think is interesting about that game, I don't enjoy playing it particularly, but it is essentially a side-on RTS on top of being a puzzle game, which I think is an intriguing design conundrum to like make that work. And they do make it work, and it continues to be interesting, so... Yeah, I certainly support it. It's not a game I want to play, but it belongs on the list.
Is it better or worse than Sonic R?
It's better.
It's worse better. For me.
That's better. 3-1.
Yep.
Dang it.
It's all right. Sonic R is still number 2. There's a long way for it to fall.
All these Sonic games. Hang on.
Jeez.
Well, the list is 50% Sonic games right now.
If you have 3D Blast on this list, I'm just going to hang up.
Okay. Get ready to hang up. I might
Our next selector is Bennett Foddy.
All right, I'm going with a game called Pipe Mania by the Assembly Line, which was an Amiga game from 1989. Americans know it better as Pipe Dream. Americans don't like manias, you know, they like dreams. So this, just to me, is just a kind of Tetris-grade classic infinite puzzle game. And I think it speaks to the quality of and the originality of this design that it's still used as the hacking minigame in all these AAA games. Like people still can't go past Pipe Mania as a basic design. It is really fun to play, and I would play it. I still do play. There's a bunch of little known Japanese two player like versus Pipe Mania games from the arcades that I do play. I just think it's a really good formula. There's something great about embodying the time pressure as like a literal pipe full of water. And it's just very compelling to me.
So like I played Frisky Tom a lot as a child, which it's essentially like level-based pipe dreams where you have one specific pipe route that you have to keep repairing and shoring up and putting back together. It's, of course, less of a self-driven puzzle. So when Pipe Mania came out, I was like, wow, this is like an expansion on Frisky Tom, which is probably not what anybody else thought about that, but I like it.
What I like about Pipe Mania is that because we couldn't use the word mania, we instead decided to go with an opium reference, which is obviously much more suitable.
Oh, there we go.
Well, it's just that, you know, in the UK, the idea of having dreams is like a mania. Like if somebody's like, right. I have a dream, you're like, that is insane. Whereas in America, you're allowed to have dreams. So that's what it comes down to.
That's why they called it the Mania Cast over in the UK.
And that's why they called it Sonic Dream over here.
Yep.
I was going to say something interesting I just looked up about Pipe Mania or Pipe Dream is that it was the basis for a North Korean propaganda game, Railway Assemblage. So it's the first game on the list to be used as part of a North Korean propaganda.
Mm.
Nice.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
That might be the first game on any list we've ever done to be used for that.
So in terms of ranking, for me, what I'm struggling with is I'd rather play Lemmings right now than Pipe Mania, but I think Pipe Mania is a tighter game design that I respect more. So I don't know which one tops it for me.
I'd rather play Sonic R than any of them. So
yeah, we don't care what you think, Brandon. the basis for me is that, like, you know, Pipe Dream is a extremely solid foundational game design. It's just been used so much that, you know, I would I can't even begin to imagine playing it again. I mean, I would still rank it above Sonic R, but it's just, it's like the Wheel, right? Like, everybody loves wheels, but no one wants to just play with a wheel.
I could play with a wheel right now. I would put it at number one, but I'm not part of the governing body here.
That's true.
I would rather, I guess I'm thinking I would rather have designed Pipe Mania than Lemmings.
Mm. That's kind of what I'm saying, but I'd also rather play, I think I got to put Lemmings above it. So I've got it in the middle right now for me.
I think so too.
Pipe Mania is number two, pushing Sonic R ever downward. Frank, you're up.
Oh boy. All right, check this out. Burnout Paradise.
Oh.
I like this game because it is a very typical of the era open world. Go to this spot where there's a dot on your radar and do this dumb side mission game. But it just sticks to the theme so hard that you're a car. You're a car that lives in a place with other cars. They don't talk to each other or anything. There's no humans anywhere. It's like Grand Theft Auto, but you're a car and you don't steal other use. You just do car stuff. And I find that very charming. And they don't lean into the humor, which I think is really important. They don't lean into the fact that you're an autonomous car. It's just understood that, no, this is just the way the world works. These are just cars that inhabit this place and do car stuff. And that's just what life is like here. So I really like it for that purpose. But also, in general, I just think it's these burnout games feel real good to play. They feel real good to crash in. And there's a lot of that sort of thing in here. So it's a good feeling, driving, fast game that I mostly like for its goofy approach to the open world genre. But not so goofy that they know it.
It made my list low down because maybe it doesn't feel super British, but you know, it is a Criterion game. It feels great. Some people would maybe argue for different Burnout games, like maybe Burnout 3 people put above. I can't remember, but I really love Paradise. I've 100%ed it. I would happily play it again when it reaches some low-cost level when it hits Switch. It's just an all-around great open world driving game, and I don't think anything else since then has ever kind of matched it.
It's also the first game on this list from the 21st century.
Woohoo.
Pretty good.
All of those Burnout games are amazing. I think 3 is the one that really sticks in my mind, but I could stand by this game as well.
Sounds like a number one to me. I don't know.
Is it better than Lemmings?
Is it better than Sonic R? I don't think so.
I mean, I'm going to fight for Lemmings still, but I'd put it under Lemmings.
The Lemmings.
Under Lemmings.
Great. Right.
Another crushing blow for Sonic R. Speaking of which, though, Brandon, you're up next.
Now I'm having a hard time because I'm realizing that the less specifically British this video game is, the further down it's going to be on the list. So now I need to figure out.
Not for me.
Whether I okay, that's true. We each are going to get 5, more or less. And so I need to figure out whether I want to put my weird ones in and make sure they get in there, or if I'm going to put in, because there's some other stuff that somebody else might say. Okay, I'm going to go with Alien Resurrection.
Huh.
Alien Resurrection is by Argonaut Games, definitely a British game developer, released in 2000 on the PlayStation 1. It is maybe the first true twin-stick first-person shooter, continuing on the legacy of, you know, like GoldenEye had a twin stick mode as well. It is a very good looking atmospheric horror single player game. It's tough as nails as well, but it looks so good. And the artistry of that game is fantastic. And it really gives you like a creepy vibe and kind of a dread skulking around the corridors. You start off shooting people in a lab, but then it gets to Xenomorphs later, but it kind of holds off on those for a long time. Less shooting than you might expect and more kind of creeping dread type horror. And I know it's kind of a dark horse for this list because it doesn't have anything that you would traditionally feel is like British in the Amiga sense, but it feels like, to me, the start of when British games started to be really like AAA high-end things, like when you get into the Rocksteady zone of things. Then it's really like, okay, yeah, that they've accelerated. And to me, Alien Resurrection is that. So I don't know if anyone else has played it, but I think it's very good.
The movie Alien Resurrection was directed by Jean-Pierre Genet.
Yeah.
So maybe they're trying to make a French game here.
At first, the game was supposed to come out before the movie, and it wound up coming out after it and being separate from it and not having totally similar themes because the game was going along so well that they wound up getting more time and deciding that it should stand on its own. So I don't think they were. I think they were just, they were like doing their British best. But yeah, it sounds like maybe nobody else has played this one.
I played it. I played the demo of it back in the day. This is one of the classic, long-standing British development houses. Of course, they were active in the 80s. The thing that sticks in my mind is that their in-house assembler was called Orgasm.
No thanks. Well, that puts it a little further down on the list.
Yeah, I was going to say that I thought for a minute you were referring to Alien Isolation, which was made by Creative Assembly, also in the UK, which came out fairly recently, and I was a really big fan of a lot of the things that you were saying about it, like in terms of like the creeping dread and the really amazing alien AI that's so simple in that game but works so well. But unfortunately, I haven't played this alien game you're talking about, so can't comment.
Yeah, the reason I put this out here is because I feel like this game is super underappreciated because it's a licensed game, but I've actually interviewed a lot of the people on the team about it, and there's been kind of a resurgence of interest in it. I think DF Retro even did an episode talking about it, because it does a lot of things that weren't really going to be done again until the 360, roughly, is what it feels like.
There's a making of it on Eurogamer from a couple of years ago. Right. It was above Sonic R for me.
Above Sonic R.
Brandon?
All my cool games are going to be at the bottom. I put it above Pipe Mania myself.
Frank, does it go above or below Pipe Mania?
Above Pipe Mania.
All right, that's where we're putting it.
Okay.
Right smack in the middle. Matthew, you're up next.
Again, it's a bit of a struggle to think. If I'm only getting so many, which should I pick? But I think I'm going to have to go for another foundational classic, and I'm going to go for Elite.
Oh!
If people are not familiar with that game, it's a really early sort of open world space simulation where you get started on a planet with a spaceship. You buy things, you fly to other planets to trade them. There's a very 2001 kind of inspired kind of way of docking with space stations. And there isn't really so much of a goal other than just becoming the best like trader and starfighter in the galaxy. We reach a rank, you know, the elite rank, basically. There are sequels. There was a couple on Amiga and PC. And then obviously recently there's Elite Dangerous, which is a huge success.
Elite Beat Dangerous.
Yes, Elite Beat Dangerous. And when you look at that game, the development of it, like they had a very tiny amount of like memory to work with. Everything's generated. The wireframe graphics are pretty classy. It's still quite playable today, to be completely honest. And I think it's just an incredible work. I find I'm losing my words here, but I just think it's a really amazing game.
So this is a series that's still active today. Of course, they're still working on the most recent sequel to it. And I think you're right, absolutely right. It's a foundational game. It's very important. But I love this pick because it's emblematic of what makes European games different than American Japanese games. So, you know, in Europe, they had computers because consoles were not much cheaper, right? So everybody had a computer in their home. And computer games, what do you get differently? Well, you don't get good sprite hardware or good sort of like graphics maybe, but you have a lot of memory. Compared to an NES, 32K on the BBC Micro is like 16 times as much, and you can do a simulation. So their games are much more simulation heavy, and a lot of the experimentation was more in the simulation vein. And so I think this is a perfect example of that. It's a game that's using procedural generation, as you say, and also like being really it's like a trade simulation, a space simulation, a flight simulation. I really recommend the sequel, Frontier Elite 2 as well, which is a game where you can kind of like go from zoomed in on like a post box in front of a house and zoom all the way out to a galaxy in like one smooth take way, way, way before Spore was pulling that trick. So yeah, for me, this is an enduring classic of English games.
Yeah, I definitely considered Frontier, but didn't go for it in the end because I thought just go for the basic, go for the original.
I didn't put it on my list because I knew someone else would, but it's a very boring but correct candidate for number one on any of this sort of list. I mean, not that the game is boring, but as a choice, it's like, it's one of the obvious ones to be like, this is the best one, because it really is like the tip of the spear of the whole. I mean, obviously sim games were large in the UK, but they're big all across Europe, and Elite did something that nobody else, no other region was making this kind of game in this kind of way. So it is uniquely British on top of all of that. It's a good one.
I recommend, by the way, I'm not going to put this on the list because I know nobody will vote for it, but David Braben's follow-up to this is called Zarch. It's like an arcade 3D game for the Acorn Archimedes. It's pretty difficult to figure out how to emulate that these days, so a lot of people haven't played it. There's an Amiga port called Virus that's not as good just because the frame rate is lower, but I really recommend, if you can get a chance to play Zarch, what an amazing, fresh, contemporary feeling design. I think it's really
put
great.
Put it in the show notes.
We'd have to play it in the arcade?
No, you have to download an Acorn Archimedes emulator and the disk file for it and figure out how to use their operating system.
I only know it for, as Virus, and it has this, talk about it a little bit, has such an amazing kind of like framing of the 3D world where it looks like you're almost looking at a little stage on the screen, which I really love about it.
More, that's more of a deep cut than a top of the tops type recommendation.
Yeah, it's no Sonic R. Right. Does Elite go at number one? Are we all in agreement on that?
Yes.
I think so.
Frank?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Bennett, you're up next.
It's tough to follow that one up, but what I'm going to do is go for a game called Damocles, which is a related kind of game. Let me try to pitch you on it, because I know not many people outside of Europe will have played this one. It's an Amiga game in the Elite vein, but it's like, well, I'm going to take the idea of Elite, which is to simulate a kind of a solar system or a galaxy scale situation. And I'm going to do a really interesting situation with it. I'm going to create like a kind of a embodied immersive puzzle game. In Damocles, you find yourself on a planet which is about to be destroyed by a comet in 1 week's time. And the president of the planet has asked you to come and solve the problem. And they give you a ship, which is great. But you quickly find that if you try to fly to the comet or to any of the other planets in the solar system, you know, relativity kicks in. Time speeds up. Time is compressed. And the comet speeds towards its target and destroys it. And so, you know, you can visit anywhere in the solar system to try to solve this problem, but you're not given any other leads or any other kind of information. And each of these planets has multiple cities. Every city has like tens of thousands of houses. Of course, the whole thing is using like procedural recipes really heavily. And I like that because this is a thing that people went totally apeshit for in Outer Wilds, which has a much smaller scope, really. Like, you know, of course, it was like a student project. This is just like the most ambitious game in the entire universe. Pulled it off. It's like not, you know, it's not super friendly. You have to bring a lot to play it. But to play a game where, you're given like an open world, it's like a whole solar system, all these systems interact, and you have to try to figure it out. For me, it was just exhilarating. It's sort of like in the same... selling the same promise as like No Man's Sky, but kind of delivering on it more, having a kind of a deeper sort of, I want to say a mystery is part of it. It's like a detective story in a way, but all told through artifice of an open world long before the modern open world genre was really set up. For me, Damocles, which of course is a sequel to a Commodore 64 game called Mercenary, but that has a much smaller scope. I think Damocles may be the most ambitious game on my list.
Did Novagen develop that, or were they just the publisher? How did that work?
That's right. It's mostly one person, Paul Wokes, for Novagen with some help from other people, but predominantly that one person. Really, an indie game. I think about this as being like one of the most indie flavored 80s games that I can think of.
Although it came out in 1990.
1990 is in the 80s,
basically.
That's fair enough.
Technically,
yeah.
It's really interesting for you to bring that game up after Elite because, and to mention No Man's Sky as well, because like it's something very specific, I think, about sort of the UK of creating these games which are kind of like massive simulations that you sort of like have to explore and kind of figure out. Like Damocles is kind of like a bit similar to stuff like Midwinter, if you know that one, and or even like going back to some of the Lords of Midnight or some of that, where it's just right. Like there's lots and lots of locations and places to go in a sense of kind of a simulated world that could be very, very alienating, confusing if you don't really have a clue what you're doing. Because I never actually played Damocles, but it's like one I remember, at least a Mercenary franchise I remember. And I've always been fascinated by these games. I think that's why, like, not to talk about Elite a bit more, was just like Elite is very, like, almost accessible. You know what you're doing, trade stuff, right?
Yeah.
Things like Damocles is like off-putting how much you're sort of dropped into the world, but I also kind of love that that's a thread you can see through British games all the way from Elite to No Man's Sky.
That's a flavor that we love in Dark Souls, is indifference to the player, but it's so intense in that game.
We're out of time. My instinct is to put this near the top, but what are you all feeling?
I put after Lemmings.
Bennett?
I think I put it, I want it to be on the list, but I think just under Lemmings is probably good.
Brandon, Frank?
I'm fine with it. I mean, it sounds real interesting. I haven't played it, obviously, but yeah. Go for it.
I'm fine with it too. I mean,
all right.
Especially for its British points.
Yeah. The president in the game is named Margaret after Margaret Thatcher. You can't get more British than that.
I could try.
Frank, you're up.
All right. I'm going to talk about a game I've never played. I only read about once, but reading about it has stuck with me so much that it made my list. I'm guessing two of y'all know this one. It's called Where Time Stood Still.
Yeah.
Oh, you know it. Okay.
I know all of it. Yeah. Static Spectrum, right?
Yeah. So Spectrum, a couple other microcomputers. It's a beautiful looking game. The premise is that you and I think you're a pilot and you've crashed and the rest of your crew has survived with you. And the goal of the game is just get from point A to point B. But it's this big open map full of traps and hazards and dinosaurs. And it seems like the hazards are randomized every time. So for example, if you're walking across a bridge the first like 10 times, it might just be fine. But then like the 11th time, one of your guys might fall off. There's behavior associated with your companions that you kind of have to balance from what I understand. So one example I read on the Hardcore Gaming 101 article was that two of the people who are with you are a couple. And like if the guy dies, the other one is just going to go like grieve by his side. And you have to kind of choose whether you're going to just carry on and try to get out of there and survive, or if you're going to then, you know, double down and try to help them and risk your own life to do that. And of course, they would be useful to you later, possibly. One of the characters is the character in every one of these movies that has a similar scenario, who's just like the go-ahead jerk who thinks he can solve everything, and he kind of gets himself in trouble, and you could let him die. But he's also the only one who can communicate with the natives to get tools that you could use to survive. So that all sounds really fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It's just kind of been stuck in my head since I read about it in like April or something like that. And I just haven't gotten around to playing it yet, but that I didn't want to exclude it from the list for that reason.
Frank, it's funny because last episode we talked about whether Ocean ever made a good game. And now here you are putting
it. They didn't make it. They published it.
Oh, they only published it? Okay.
Yeah, Denton Designs.
Yeah.
All right.
It's one of the only studios that was around in England at the time that had women on the development team. So it really stands out for that reason. But they have some very interesting games.
They were doing Bandersnatch, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No, that was Imagine Software, I think. And they...
Yeah, that was Imagine. Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
The people from Imagine either formed or became part of Denton Designs. Yeah, Denton Designs did lots of really interesting games. Like, it's interesting that you picked this one specifically, Frank, because like, definitely games that they made that sort of like hovered around my list. One is Frankie Goes to Hollywood, which is a game based on the band Frankie Goes to Hollywood that's really interesting. Where Time Stood Still also sort of fits into that milieu of like isometric British games that are kind of like interesting and weird, because most other places didn't go all in on isometric, right? I have one isometric game in my list, which I may or may not put up.
For most of these Denton Design games, they tend to have very, very interesting original concepts, but they really don't have a sense of contemporary sense of playability, which of course we have descended from Nintendo mostly. You have to bring a lot to enjoy them, playing them now. I haven't played Where Time Stood Still, but I did play the other game they have that's very similar to this, which is The Great Escape.
We don't have time to talk about The Great Escape. We're out of time. Where do we rank this?
I would put this further down the list. I think it's a very interesting one to have there. It's probably just a shade above Sonic R for me.
Yeah, oh, sure. Above Sonic R.
Sonic R is the champion. It should be below Sonic R.
Frank, you're the deciding
I'm
factor.
I'm good with above or below, but wait, am I the deciding factor on that?
Whether it goes above or below Sonic R, yes.
Oh, God. I think it's below.
Ah!
Okay. All right.
Break. USA.
Okay. Who's next? I think Brandon is next.
I think it is me who is next. Okay. For now, I'm going to continue trying to put on games that I don't think anyone else would put on there, although they might expect me to. I'm not sure which exact one to do. Either Tempest 2000 or TXK.
Don't give away your hand too much.
No, I mean...
It's the same
what
game.
I mean is either of these Tempests. One of these Tempests should be on there.
I put TXK on my list, so I'm happy for that one.
Yeah, let's do TXK by all means.
TXK.
The reason I had Tempest 2000 is because it's like the first game to be like that, aside from Tempest. But TXK is like the crystallization of the idea, so we can go with it. Obviously, we got Mystery Welshman, Jeff Minter, making just whatever games he can put particles into, he's going to make that kind of a video game with a bunch of particles everywhere. But TXK is just so full of stuff. And it's also like the legacy of that 1-2 person coding ideal that just never went away. Like back in the Amiga days or whatever, I would interview so many people who would be like, I miss those old indie days of just like three people in a warehouse making this game. And Jeff Minter has just never stopped doing that. He never at any point was he like, time to get a big team of 50 together. He's like, no, it's me and my partner, and that's it. I'm going to put yaks in here. I'm going to put particle explosions. It's going to feel really good to play. It's going to be hard to look at, and it's going to have techno music in it. And, he sticks to it, and it works, and it feels good, and it is 100% British, even though, I mean, Welsh people are, I don't know if they want to be British, but I guess they're part of the group.
Some do,
yeah.
Some don't.
Yeah.
They don't want to be, but they got
to
be.
I'm not sure he is Welsh. I think he might be English and moved to Wales.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you have to have a Jeff Minter game on the list.
Absolutely.
He's been at it since the early 80s as a teenager and has just never stopped doing it in the same way, except that I guess now he works with his life partner, Giles. I think of him as kind of the indie game developer in a way. It's like he's like reinventing old styles. He's bringing a lot of creativity and offbeat humor, but also injecting a lot of like left field sexuality in ever since the 80s, which is really pioneering in my mind. So, I think it's fantastic.
We called him the something of video games at some point.
Yeah, I don't remember. He was like the grandpa or the, I don't know. He was something good. I also love that he, whenever people are like, you know, kill your babies or whatever, Jeff Minter never gives up on any idea he's ever had. He's made so many Grid Runners, so many Tempest 2000s. Just like, if he has a good idea, he's like, let's do it 5 more times and make it a little better, which I personally really appreciate.
I really love TXK. And one of the things that I really love about Jeff Minter's game design as he's progressed is that even as sort of inaccessibly visual his games can be, with like particle effects everywhere, the games are actually super forgiving in terms of how you play them. Like, he has had the genius idea. He's the only person who does this, which is he allows every level, the game saves your score and level lives at that point. So you can always just keep playing the game forward as if you're having your best run of all time, even if you fail, allowing you to see all of the content of a very hard shooter without feeling like, you know, you need to do it on one go. You can always go back to the beginning and try again to get better and further. That type of like thing is like just really great design to me. And TXK, I've seen all of. I didn't get the most recent thing he did, which was, I guess, Tempest 4000, which I intend to pick up eventually. But yeah, as you say, all of his Grid Runners, everything else, there has to be a Jeff Minter game in the list, and I'm very happy for it to be TXK.
Where do we put it?
I mean, I'd put it at the top.
Or the top.
All the way at the top?
I like it at the top, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm putting it above Elite personally, but somewhere at the top.
I could put it below Elite and be fine. Like, the two are interchangeable to me. They're the most British.
Yeah, let's put it below Elite.
Sure.
The only thing is, like, Elite is such an obvious first choice that I would love it if we could find something else eventually. I like that. But if not, then it's okay.
That would be for the best, I think. Matthew, you've got our next one.
All right. I'm going to stay kind of on theme, and I'm going to go for, well, School Days. School Days is really interesting because it kind of fits kind of a lot of theme of British games, which is like it creates a kind of a world that's based in reality. So a lot of these games, Everyone's the Wally, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, they're just kind of set in the normal type of like life that the people who'd be playing these games would have, except in this situation, it's a very small, and again, we're talking simulation essentially of being a schoolboy, kind of a classic kind of Grange Hill-esque school where you wear uniforms, there's different types of teachers, and you have a little sort of quest to perform, but there's a lot of like lovely kind of emergent design from it, such as when you go into classes, there's not actually enough chairs for all the students, so you're constantly fighting with other students to sit in seats. You get lines, you get punishments, you try to do something bad, you have to do it while not being watched by the teachers. It has a beautiful kind of diorama-esque kind of visuals. It's just a really interesting, great game. The only type of thing that's really been spawned from it, I would say, would be like Rockstar's Bully, which is another game that I loved, and I would love to see more types of things like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was gonna ask what makes this better than a Bully.
Well, Bully wasn't developed in the UK, first of all, as far as I know. I think that was maybe Rockstar San Diego.
Irrelevant. Question's irrelevant.
That's right.
I had this on my list as well. I think I really appreciate a game like this that is just in such a limited space, but has a lot of toys within it. You know, like Matthew was saying, just it being sort of grounded in some sense of reality, and the other moving things feeling like living people, you know, like the teachers seeing you or not seeing you, stuff like that. I think it's a pretty remarkable game on the spectrum.
Very, very British in my mind. I think, you know, we grew up watching Grange Hill, even in Australia, and that was my window into that very strange English world. And I think just for the amount of Englishness in particular, I'd say more than Britishness deserves to be on the list.
The funny thing about it is obviously it doesn't represent anything about how my school days, you know, felt. I mean, I did wear a uniform, admittedly, but like it's very much based in the idea of Grange Hill, which if listeners aren't familiar is a classic British afternoon soap opera, basically about kids at school. And the one thing I'd say as well is that school days is actually still very playable nowadays. Like a lot of these games you're talking about, the Spectrum, they don't have that base playability, a bit like Bennett was saying, in terms of good feeling controls. But if you can get past that sort of mindset and take it on the level that it is, the emergent nature of the world makes it still very interesting and playable, I think, even to this day.
Now, what makes Grange Hill better than, say, a Degrassi?
Well, I mean, as I say, it's Canada Day today, so I can't badmouth Degrassi either. So, sorry.
Yeah, there we go. Where do we rank it?
After Lemmings.
Better than Damocles? Yeah.
Down in the middle of the pack for me, this one. It I have played this recently. It is fascinating culturally, and I think also just from a game design point of view, a sort of like an early example of a kind of immersive sim-style design. Amazing that it runs on the Spectrum and it looks good, but it's not that playable by contemporary standards.
So middle of the pack is above Alien Resurrection.
I wish more of you had played Alien Resurrection, because I think you would put it above Alien Resurrection above it.
I like it maybe more than Burnout Paradise, but I mean, again, to what extent that's rose-colored glasses, I don't know.
All right, we'll put it right in the middle then, and we'll be right back after a quick break.
Frank, I'm relying on you to put a certain game series in here. If you don't, I'm going to be surprised.
I guess I'm going to be... Oh, well, I think I know.
I can potentially guess, but I don't know.
The next one I do will be my guess.
All right.
Okay, all right.
And then if it's not that, then I probably don't have it.
Welcome back to the Insert Credit 4th of July special, where we're ranking the best British video games of all time. Right now, it is Bennett Bonney's turn.
All right. Yeah, it's difficult to know what to pick here. I wanted to have at least one pick in the list that is representative of British humor, because I think that is one of the things that gives it a different flavor than games from other places. And all through the 80s and 90s, I think of British, you know, comedy culture is still being in the shadow of Monty Python. So it's surrealist humor, right? It's absurdist humor is really the flavor of games from the UK for me, from that whole era. The one I want to pick is Sensible Software's WizKid.
Yes!
If you haven't played it, it is a very, very strange game. It is, on the one hand, Breakout, but you are the ball. You're a funny little kind of embodied ball that can bite the bricks and headbutt them and juggle them on his head. But then periodically goes into a kind of a world where he grows a body and legs, and you can walk around and do things like clear out a volcano by pooping on a toilet, or you're swimming around underwater, you're rescuing kittens. Is all of this kind of very
sounds British
absurdist
me.
Style of yeah, it's a very absurd style of puzzle solving.
This is WizKid, the story of WizBall 2.
Yeah, so WizBall was a slightly less bizarre, but somewhat bizarre shmup for the Commodore 64, which was very well loved. That's, of course, a studio that made most of their money on Sensible Soccer, which is a good game. But for me, their magnum opus is WizKid. It's wildly out of scope. It doesn't totally make sense. It's a bunch of weird ideas that have been mashed together. But it's extremely entertaining and holds up pretty well for having good 50 frames per second, pretty unusual for games from that time.
And the opening title has all kinds of particles flying all over the place, which is just about the most British thing you can do.
Yeah, just to set up the beginning, he's conducting the 1812 symphony with the cannons going off, and he's conducting the orchestra, and at the very last note of the song, his head explodes. So that was the flavor of humor that you had at the time.
Very giant footsteps on everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, WizKid didn't make it onto my list, but it's a, as you say, it's a really great example of sort of British surrealist humor and just kind of the specific style and I would say feel of a British Amiga game is very brought across by the visuals and the play and all, everything of WizKid. I don't have anything particularly educational to say about WizKid. It's definitely what I would call, in terms of sensible software games, it's the insert credit type of choice, right? It's the not the one everyone thinks of straight away, but it's also like one that's like really good if you want to seek it out. So it's pretty high on this list, I would say.
Yeah, I'm watching a video of it, and I like how basically incomprehensible it is to look at.
That's what we're going for.
This looks like a middle list to me.
Fair enough. I just struggled to find something that was as steeped in the flavor of British humor.
I think this is a game that deserves to be on this list. Let's be clear. Mm-hmm. This is an insert credit choice for sure. I like this personally. I'm looking around Burnout Paradise.
Put it above or below School Days, frankly, for me, maybe above, but I'm not sure.
Bennett,
I would put it one slot above School Days.
That seems to be the consensus here. Brandon, you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm cool with it.
Okay.
Once we move Alien Resurrection up a few slots, it's all going to be perfect.
WizKid, the story of Whizball 2 goes right there. Frank, you're up next.
Okay, let's do Batman, Arkham, Knight. Let's go with Knight.
This is indeed what I was relying on you to put out there.
Okay, I like Arkham Knight specifically because, well, I feel like it was a little bit overlooked somehow critically because I thought it was fantastic. And it's like this group was just at the peak of this thing that they were doing. Like, it is the quintessential ending to that line of work, I feel. Everything's better than the previous two games. It just somehow, like, bouncing from side mission to side mission just seems a lot more seamless. You also have a lot more reason to do the side missions. It's such a small touch, but most of the side missions aren't just like go find the 50 things. There is some of that, but it's like most of the side missions are actually events where you are chasing a villain that you know really well. You know,
it's all stuff like Batman would do. It never breaks the world.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like you're doing these missions because like that's how you get Two-Face in jail. You're doing these missions because that's how you get to the Riddler who's in his hideout. Guys, I mean, the combat in those games is maybe my favorite combat. I don't know. It's at its best in this one. The writing, I think, is at its best. Sorry, Paul Dini, but I think the writing in the third one.
Yeah.
And it looks great. I don't know. Like, I love this game a lot.
Yeah, I think it's really good.
And another thing I would add to it is that I think it's a proper ending to a trilogy, which is cool. I always like that. And I also think it's a proper send-off for Mark Hamill's performance as the Joker.
Yeah.
Like, put a definitive end on that. And if that is meaningful to you, like it is for me, just having grown up watching the animated series, I think that that was such a good way to end that character.
I think everyone has the same complaint about Arkham Knight, and that's the Batmobile.
I like it.
People just really don't like the Batmobile.
I like it. I like stealth car. It's a stealth car.
It is a stealth car.
It's cool.
My thing about this is, I mean, obviously I was hoping it would be on the list. I just want to make the argument for it being a British game because it is a little like, it doesn't have a massively British face to it. But I think that if you consider the tradition of British licensed games, British game developers made so many licensed games. And for a long time, that was like, at least in America, I feel like we sort of knew them for like either weird platformers starring a gross blob thing, or any licensed game was going to be, you know, Ocean or Probe or Psygnosis or whatever. And this is sort of like the best possible example of doing it well and making the only game where you feel like Batman. So that's my pitch for this actually truly being a British game.
This is an extremely good game, and I think that it's fair to say that licensed games have a British flavor. I will say, though, that this is in a genre that I think of as being quintessentially Japanese, so I think there might be a little bit of trying to cheat again a little tiny bit.
Or American. I mean, Uncharted.
I think American.
Is sort of,
this is, yeah, like, for me, American. It's Neketsu Koha Kunio-kun, Renegade, right? Like that's what set the template for this game of Batman. So
you think so?
Yeah, I think like the Brawler template, like Double Dragon, if you like, is basically the same.
Sure,
yeah.
But that's,
I think that's more Arkham Asylum.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree.
I always think of Arkham Asylum more being a Metroidvania, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like we're all over the place.
This for sure deserves to be on the list.
Yes.
Not sure where.
Yeah, I didn't put this on my list. I put Asylum because I played City and didn't like it and then never got around to Knight in the end. But yeah, I mean, if you're saying Knight is even better than Asylum, then I'm very happy for it to be on the list after Damocles.
Sounds good.
Frank?
I'm okay with that. Sure.
You went a little higher, Frank?
I'm okay with it being higher, yeah. I like it above Damocles myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I would put it above Lemmings myself as well.
I would put it below TXK myself.
Let's level with it being right above Damocles.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Wait for me.
Brandon, you're up.
Oh, it's me. Okay. Well, boy, it's tough. It's tough here to figure out which ones I want to go with. But I'm going to have to say I need there to be a Bitmap Brothers game on this list. And
yes.
I am choosing Chaos Engine / Soldiers of Fortune. I don't know if that's everyone else's favorite Bitmap Brothers game, but it just, for me, the look of this game was like, I just didn't realize that you could make stuff that implied this level of detail. Everything is like rounded. Everything feels like it's organic somehow. They just had such a strong sense of how to do intelligent tiling and construction of backgrounds, and like cutscenes all looked so good. And I really like playing this game. It's got great music. It's got this weird, like, I don't like steampunk, but I didn't know that at the time. And I was like, what is this weird aesthetic that they're going for? And I played it a bunch on the Genesis, and the Amiga version actually looks better. And so it's a graphical marvel as far as 2D goes. Like, it's what people still aspire to when they're making high-end, high-res 2D graphics. The perspective on the characters could be a little better, but the backgrounds and explosions and stuff, they're all top-notch.
I love the use of color in this game.
Oh, yeah.
I agree. Really beautiful. I think it's Dan Malone is the lead graphics artist. Really took a lot of leads from demo scene art of the day, which was really interested in making everything look metallic by using different shades for the dark areas of everything than you're using in the light areas. And the whole thing just has this kind of feeling of being like carved out of steel in some sort of way. And I really love that. It's a good game. It's a nice example of an isometric game, which was such a huge thing on computer games from Europe through the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not true isometric, though. It's like
Zelda style isometric. It has, it does have, like, you can go up and down stairs and so on.
Camera is like straight down. It's not canted at an angle, but it is, you can see walls
right
when you can go up things. So that, like, kind of qualifies.
It didn't make my list because my pick for Bitmap Brothers games is, of course, Speedball 2 Brutal Deluxe, but Chaos Engine is amazing. It's a great shooter. Absolutely worth playing.
My pick would have been Gods, but I know nobody likes that game except for
Gods
me.
Gods is terrible. So. Oh my god, what's wrong with your brain, man?
So good. But anyway, I know nobody would vote
for
it.
The way that the character moves, oh my god.
I love it. I'm so crunchy, there has never been a crunchier game. But I'm happy to put my weight behind Chaos Engine. Good game.
I mean, you could at least pick Magic Pockets, which has the amazing Betty Boo song.
Bennett, are you telling me you like a game where the character moves awkwardly?
Yeah, I like it. I like everything about it is so crunchy. It's like just, anyway, but, and it has one of the best sound designs. But I think this was from a very similar period of their work, to be honest. It was maybe 1 year apart or 2 years apart. So I see a lot of the same inspiration in it.
Where do we rank it?
I'm not as interested as I am in School Days. That's where I am right now.
Well, it's way higher for me, but
right. Yeah, it's pretty high for me.
But I've played it a lot. I would say that in terms of games that felt British and were different to me, I played this game when I was like 12, 13 years old. So this is the British game that has the biggest influence on my personal life, I would say.
I like it higher than Burnout Paradise, but I don't know if anyone would agree with that.
I do.
Sure.
Well, in That's deference to Frank, I think we should put it one below Burnout Paradise.
But that was just 3-1.
Yeah, but he wanted to put it below School Days.
So it's actually not really even much of a compromise, but I'm fine with it.
Well, it's a quarter of a compromise, basically, so it counts.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Sure. All right, that's where we'll put it. The Chaos Engine. Matthew, you're up.
So how many do I have left? Two, right?
Yeah, you have two left.
It's getting really tough now. Because we just had a discussion of isometric, I'm going to have to go for the best John Ripman game. I was thinking about, just for the lols, picking John Ripman's Batman. But I'm going to go for the game that followed that, Head Over Heels, which is a really, really fantastic isometric adventure game where you have two characters. You have Head, who can jump very high. You have Heels, who can run really fast. You're still doing that usual thing, exploring a surrealist landscape full of blocks to push and enemies to avoid, puzzles to solve. But it was pretty groundbreaking at the time. It had kind of a save system. It had multiple worlds to visit. It had sections where your characters would join together to solve certain things and have to be split apart. In terms of a world design, at least for the era, it's extremely good. I actually kind of love how it looks. There's some nice, I think, later versions of it, maybe the Amiga and stuff, that look pretty good. And there's even a fairly recent, maybe retro remake, I think, that looks amazing as well. It was extremely seminal for me as a child when I played this. I don't know, I'm just a huge fan of this game. There are games that followed it, maybe the pinnacle of isometric game design, because I don't really rate any of Ultimate Play the Game or Rare's version of that. So yeah, Head Over Heels, John Ripman.
So Ultimate slash Rare, I guess, really kicked off this genre with Nightlaw. They were so far ahead of everybody technically in terms of being able to make like a full 3D game with physics where things could fall off of objects and land on other objects in 3D. So for me, I think that that Nightlaw is clearly the pioneer, but I agree that even for all of that, they're not that playable today. If you try to play Nightlaw on an emulator on default settings, on kind of realistic settings, it's about 8 frames a second, which is tough to take. And so the advantage of Head Over Heels, of course, is you can play on the Amiga version, which is going to run a lot faster. So I would recommend that people play Head Over Heels, but also just look at Alienate and Nightlaw, the games that came earlier, just to sort of understand how this whole genre was kicked off. This was such a big deal. It was like a wave that ripped through Europe and the Soviet Union of people making games in this style after realizing this is a thing that you could do on a computer that you couldn't really do on a console. And something that I think that Americans didn't really get to see until the Genesis era. So, you know, for me, Head Over Heels is a good choice.
That whole genre is really interesting to me because I knew it as a Japanese genre, but it was, of course, like the Japanese games were influenced by these, like they saw these and then did it. So like, to me, Light Crusader was the game that was like this, except, you know, Light Crusader was not popular. It still isn't popular on the Genesis. It's like the treasure game that nobody cares about, which is bizarre. So somehow it just didn't catch in America. But I've also, I've played other Japanese games in this genre, like Götzendiener on the PC Engine, and obviously Landstalker is in there. And so I think it's definitely an influential kind of a genre. So
if I played Batman, have I played this?
No, not really.
Yeah. A little bit.
Batman is like, it's a similar sort of gameplay. It's just that this one is the level design and the concept of having two characters that are exploring the world separately and together sometimes using their abilities is one of the big aspects of Head Over Heels that really blew my mind. I honestly, I like Batman as well. Like, you know, but it's not, it doesn't have the same panache, let's say, you know.
I can't navigate in that game. I can't like not walk into walls that kill me because I just can't tell if I'm going to clear them or not. So that's my big problem with Batman. I'm going to assume it's the same here.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's time to rank.
It's really high for me, but I mean, again, rose colored glasses, right?
Yeah, I love this genre a lot. For me, the game that I love in it is Alienate. I think it deserves to be the top third.
I mean, I'm happy with it after Batman, I would say, is where I would put it.
Bennett, you okay with that?
Yeah.
Brandon,
yeah,
Frank?
I'm good.
There. Yeah.
All right.
I'm learning about this one here, so.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of homework on this list.
Yeah, good.
That's very good. Bennett, it's your turn.
Yeah, okay. So I'm also going to go for a isometric game, but in a different vein. I think it's important in any list of British games that we talk about, a Bullfrog game.
Yeah.
Love or hate Peter Molyneux. I love him personally.
We do a lot of making fun of him on this show. So,
you know, it's easy to do. It's easy to do, but very few designers in history have had such a string of amazing hits that were not, you know, in genres. They were.
We also agree with that.
Genuinely experimental. The one I would pick for him, it was a toss-up for me. The one I would play is Syndicate, but the one I'm going to pick is Populous, which I also would play.
Interesting.
I think Populous is very elegant design, and it's a good example again of a game that you couldn't really do on a console very well. I know there was a Super Nintendo port of Populous, but you kind of need a mouse and you need a lot of memory. And so this is a game, if you haven't played it, where you're a god in charge of a tribe of people. You can intervene, but you can't really intervene on them because they have free will. So all you can really do is move little bits of earth up and down and do other kinds of abilities that move bits of earth up and down. And it's through tiny interventions, you try to create massive social and sort of population level effects. I just love that idea. And it's done in a really elegant, efficient way through the design. It looks nice for the time when it was coming out, and just very original, just incredibly original. Makes the most of a computer system, and also a fun game, especially in multiplayer. Really good, like long form multiplayer game.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think that, like, I put Syndicate on my list. I struggled between Syndicate and Dungeon Keeper, but you know, Bullfrog had a really good run. Like, I think people look now as Peter Molyneux as a joke, but you even look at games like Magikarp, I think is super interesting, so fast and sort of playable and strange in its own way, the theme games. But like Populous is, again, a foundational game that sort of land mover game. It's still a very fun, interesting game. It's not my favorite, but, you know, it's a good pick.
I've played this, of course, on the PC Engine.
Of course.
For whatever reason, it does not have mouse support, which doesn't make sense to me, but you know, it does use the Super CD, so it's got enough RAM to handle things. But just a incredibly minor side note is that on the Super CD version, which has both Populous and Populous Promised Lands, Bomberman can be one of your choices as what the little people look like. It gets my vote.
Gotta have a Bomberman game.
The DS version, in fact, where you can change the cities and stuff, I think, to Nintendo consoles.
Mm.
That rules. Yeah, oh yeah, there is, I believe, PC Engine console that you can have, and that's like when you have your Bombermans, they come out of little tiny PC Engines.
Nice.
Good stuff.
So number one.
Yeah, that's right, if it's got Bomberman in it.
This one isn't too high for me, but I would be interested to see where Ben would put it.
Yeah, I put it like maybe number 3 or 4 in this list, I'd say.
Whoa.
Wow. It's a lot lower for me.
Yeah, I don't have any fun playing it. Is the problem?
It's like below school days for me. It's like school days Bennett.
I mean, it's definitely above the stuff that Brandon likes. So.
God darn it! God darn it! I got number 2 game here still. By the way, everybody. So
sure.
My vote is also below school days, above Alien Resurrection.
Brandon,
you're all gonna regret this later when you play.
Do you
want to
move it up?
I'm telling you. No, it's move it up. Resurrection up.
Move Populous up.
No, I think below school days is good.
Okay.
The joy in your eye. I could see your eyes when he said move Resurrection up. It was like kicking a puppy, you know?
No.
That's right.
No. I think out of deference to Bennett, I'll put it just above school days, but that's sure. Where it'll stay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Frank, your second to last game.
God, I got so many. You want some of mine?
Maybe. I'm just gonna go for an obvious one. Grand Theft Auto 4. That's the last one I played.
That's my favorite.
I liked that one a lot. I like that there was this sense. I might have been reading too much into it, but I almost felt like the character I was playing as was so desensitized to violence because of his past that the killing hundreds of people without thinking of them part of the game almost felt metaphorical in a way. And again, I'm probably reading way too into Grand Theft Auto because they definitely did not go that direction in the sequel. But I really liked some of the things that they added in this one. Just the idea of like being able to take a taxi to missions was nice. I really liked the way that dialogue spoken as you're sort of forced to drive is timed so well to how long it's going to take you to get somewhere. I don't know, man. It's Grand Theft Auto. I mean, I'm picking a Grand Theft Auto for a million different reasons. We could easily say GTA 3 for just sort of creating this entire genre, but I think 4 is a much better game. And I haven't played 5.
My only thing to say about this is that I don't like GTA, but I appreciate that it has this kind of cynical view of American culture that is almost imperceptible to the larger part of Americans that play it. They're not like, this game is coming from a place of cynicism about the place that I live. They're like, oh yeah, this is cool. This is legit. I like that. I appreciate that angle of it. And I also, I mean, obviously it's a well-made game. I just don't like playing it.
I like Grand Theft Auto. I think, you know, this is not my favorite of them, but it's a good pick, I think. I will say that by the time I got to 4, because it set such a formula for itself, you start to really notice the particular annoyances that you know, like in the writing, but really for me in the kind of quest design and in the NPC design, starts to really bug me by the time I get to here. But it's a great series. You can't deny the importance of it. The influence of it is very, very high. Like it's difficult to argue that this is one of the most important, at least economically, in terms of design, creativity, and culture, I think, games out of the UK.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, basically, we have to admit that Scotland invented modern video gaming with Grand Theft Auto. Let's just be honest. Let's all accept that. Yeah. And people should put, you know, some respect on its name. You know, like GTA 4 is not my favorite of them. I actually put Vice City on my list because it's the one I've had the most fun with. Like, I've played them all.
Vice City's fun.
And yeah, I mean, I think that, like, you cannot argue with the unbelievable importance to the industry in terms of what it created, what it did. I think 4 is, as Bennett says, has annoyances. But I do like that, unlike 5, where being set in LA, you can never get a taxi. In New York, you can constantly get a taxi whenever you want rather than stealing cars. So, you know, it's a good pick. Not my favorite, but I think it's Titanic. It has to go high.
Yeah. Yep. Where are you feeling like putting it, folks?
Any
folks?
It was
just addressed to all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, all four of you. Among my own picks, I think Arkham Knight is like twice the game.
I'd agree.
That would maybe put it somewhere toward the middle.
Like right below Sonic R? Is what I'm thinking? Is that what we're all thinking? I think I can speak for everyone.
I'm thinking right above WizKid, maybe?
No, I'd have put it right above Head Over Heels, probably, for me, just beneath our Batman.
I think that it makes sense there.
I guess it's better than Burnout Paradise. Okay.
Yeah, let's put these two games next to each other. These two games.
So it's GTA with or without people?
Yeah.
All right.
That's the one. And it's better without.
Oh, wait, you put it... Oh, wait, that's where they said. Okay, got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all what did right. Brandon want?
What Brandon want doesn't matter.
Oh, got it. Right. That's true. Okay.
Speaking of which, Brandon.
In deference to me, we're going to not listen to that.
Brandon, it's time for your last pick.
So I'm really disappointed that I have to be the one to do this one because I wanted to do something weirder, but it's not looking like someone else is going to choose a Wipeout. So I'm going to do Wipeout XL / 2097. That's the second Wipeout. It's a really good racing game. It's like, in my mind, the racing combat game template. You know, Mario Kart went one direction, Twisted Metal took it in another, but this game was, you know, it was synonymous with the PlayStation as far as I'm concerned. Like, and it had the amazing graphic design, it had the music. It's just such a game that feels like it came from somewhere. It came from someone's design sensibilities, even though it came from, obviously, many people's sensibilities combined. I think that was my first awareness, really, of a game being British and good at the same time. Not to say that I had a huge amount of awareness of it before, but this was a game where I was like, I need to pay attention to who is making this and what they have done with it, because every choice in here was purposeful. And I even like the floatiness of the controls because you're a hover thing. For me, it all works. That's what I have to say about it.
Yeah, we got to have a Wipeout game on the list.
For sure.
That makes sense. I hate playing Wipeout personally, but I can't deny that it was an important series, and it pulls off what it's trying to do well.
Yeah.
That series, it took me a long time to get used to because you really have to pay attention to your racing lines. It's not sloppy. You know, there's no quick fix, like a bounce turn in Mario Kart or something. You have to be like...
It's very inertia-based.
Yeah, very inertia-based, but... You can't kind of argue with its importance and its representation of British gaming, almost culture of the late 90s. You know, there's the dance music soundtracks, there's the visuals, which are by Designers Republic, which have that sort of weird sort of thing that was always been popular in the UK, which is kind of a hyper-stylized version of sort of cyberpunk Japan. Do you know what I mean? Like, you still see in the, I guess, I'm assuming the enduring popularity of like super dry clothes and things like that. Like, for me, like, the funniest thing about that is like, PS1, rather, felt so British to me in a weird way because of things like that. And
right.
Wipeout is the perfect example of that. And I think the sequel is probably the pinnacle of the series when you look back at it now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with all that. And the visual design really gives me this, like, clearly leading into the Y2K aesthetic that happened in the Dreamcast and all the, like, rounded corners on everything. It wasn't exactly that, but it was the gateway to it. And I feel like, at least for me, I played this in high school, I felt like I was looking at something new when I looked at
that. This is pod racing.
It was truly pod racing. Yeah, I think it's a hot one. I wish I could have put in a weirder game, but I had to get this on the list.
I appreciate your noble sacrifice. Where do we put it on the
list? I mean, it's real high up for me. I don't know. It doesn't sound like anybody else is super into it, but I mean, I personally would put it below TXK for my life. Well, no, yes, I would. You don't have to do that.
I'd put it above Burnout Paradise.
Okay. As the Burnout Paradise person, I'm okay with that.
Sure. Let's put it one above Burnout Paradise.
In deference to Brandon, I'm going to put it two above Burnout Paradise.
I got deference.
Huh? Yeah.
I mean, I would undeference that by 1 point. Above Damocles, fine. But above Head Over Heels?
No, not above Head Over Heels. Above Damocles.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, we're good. Next is Matthew. This is your last chance to add a game to the list.
Okay, so the problem is there's one specific franchise that no one else has taken the bullet on, but I cannot have this list happen without me mentioning, as we all know, I've talked about it multiple times before on the show, the greatest game of all time, Sensible World of Soccer.
Yeah.
Everyone was just leaving it to you, is what that's what's happening. We knew you would have to do it, so like, it's yours.
Yeah, but there's one other franchise that we haven't mentioned yet, so I'm waiting for one of you to take the bullet on that. Sensible World of Soccer is, in my mind, the greatest sports game of all time. There's no argument. Every single character is a tiny pixel man. It feels incredible to play. Kicking the ball and scoring with a curvy banana kick is pretty much better than sex. Let's all be honest. We've all had sex. It's fantastic. But comparison to that, to sitting next to one of your friends right. and smashing in goal after goal, you cannot beat that game. Like, and the fact that it's still kept alive by, I believe, a bunch of Germans by this point, who update the teams every year. It's a game that I boot up regularly, usually when there's a big tournament on, like right now Euro 2020 is happening. I genuinely feel it's one of the best feeling games ever, and it's such a perfect distillation of a sport to brass tacks. You know, it's just the fucking best, guys. It's so good.
It is important to have a football game on here because in England, everybody plays a football game. You can't count on anybody playing any other kind of video game, but if you talk to anybody, they definitely play FIFA or Pro Evo now. FIFA, of course, is a Canadian game. That certainly wouldn't count. I have hundreds of hours in Sensible Soccer. It's not my second favorite Sensible Software game after WizKid. That'd be cannon fodder, but I do love this game. The distillation of the sort of fun parts of the sport really does a good job of it. And it's cute as hell as well.
It's very cute.
Little pixel man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've only played this while getting destroyed by Matthew. And I can't say that the experience was particularly enlightening as to where the fun part is. But I appreciate that the fun part almost definitely exists because of how much fun Matthew was having, regardless of whether I was really even present. So
it's called compersion. That feeling, taking nice. Pleasure in somebody else's pleasure.
Yeah. Well, I got a little of that.
Well, joke. That's how I'm feeling in terms of, you know, ranking it right now. I don't care about this game at all, but I like Matthew Kumar.
Yeah, I'm ready to put it at number one, just based what? On number Matthew's one
with a bullet. Number one with a bullet. I mean, it is number one to me. It genuinely is. But if you want to move it down or something like that, you can do it.
Buddy, I'm here. Number one.
I would put it one above School Days.
Wow.
A big difference.
Wow. No, I mean, I love all these games. They're all good. Yeah. But for me, I actually think this is a genre of game that has gotten better over time. FIFA started out wretchedly bad in 1993 and is now a really good game that I love. I wouldn't still play Sensible now because I can play FIFA. So
that is truly deranged. Like, they are so different. One is like an arcade sports game and one is FIFA. Like, the whole point of Sensible Soccer is you have one button. and a control stick, do you know what I mean? Or a D-pad, depending on how you want to play it. And like, that's what makes it so genius, is there's so much you can do on that little pitch with those tiny little men with one button and one stick. It is the pinnacle, actually, of like British game design based in that Amiga era where you had one button, right? There's no like needing to do up to jump. The literal pinnacle of that era, like, you cannot
peak
argue with it.
Design.
Like, it's not the same thing as FIFA. Sensible World of Soccer is a thing to itself. So yeah, if you want to play FIFA, but don't pretend they're the same thing.
My only criticism of this game is that it feels kind of frictionless in its movement and stuff. I would like a little more of that. It kind of just feels like they go exactly where you want, which is good, but it's also like it's overly smooth.
They go exactly where you want, but the ball doesn't, because if you turn too fast, the ball just falls away from you, which is what it's about. It's all about managing the balancing of the ball and the little guy, because you know that, like, if you're playing a particular guy, you could maybe weave around a guy and then score, right? But if you're playing another guy, when he turns, he'll just flip the ball away. So you gotta be so... My hands right now, if you could see them, they're like tensing up. I'm imagining holding the controller or the joystick, you know? Like, it's like a game feel thing that is just... That's why it's like sex, man. It's like, you just got to get to the right point, you know? Like, it's all foreplay.
I just want to recommend to the listener, this is also, like, this question of the game feel is one of the locuses of, like, one of the all-time game design beefs between Sensible Software, who made this game, and Dino Dini, who made the competing game Kickoff 2.
Which is shit.
And they take a different approach to game design. That beef is still ongoing, and if you watch Dino Dini's relatively recent GDC talk, you get a window into it. It's kind of amazing, and I recommend it.
That's fun.
Now I want to see like different teams of like video game soccer hooligans who support different franchises of soccer games.
And they're all like 45 years old at this point.
Okay, we need to figure out where to rank this.
Number one.
I just don't know. I mean, I'll never play it. But
I'll put it one above Chaos Engine.
Can we compromise by putting it one above Wipeout 2097?
Of course it has to be one above a game that I recommended.
I would put it, look, honestly, the lowest I would put it is below Lemmings.
That's not really much of a compromise.
We're bargaining.
That's not really a compromise at all.
In deference to me, that's where it goes.
All right.
It can go whatever, guys. I'm
Let's put it one below Wipeout 2097.
All right.
Bennett, it's time
Monsters.
For your last game.
Monsters, all of you.
This is a tough one for me, picking between a game that I still play or one that I think is important and people should know about. I'm going to pick the latter. It's going to be Deus Ex Machina, or as the author called it, Deus Ex Machina by Mel Croucher. I just think people should know about this. This is like 1984. Mel Croucher was this person who was the very first game designer to say, fuck video games. He felt like they were too much in kind of violence and genre convention, orthodoxy, and nobody was pushing it to the kind of heights of artistic ambition that he thought that the medium was capable of. In 1984, you know, he was sending like experimental games over pirate radio, sending like the bits over radio broadcast. You had to record the radio and then put it on a tape and load it into your computer. Really interesting guy. You know, he was like, the problem with all video games, they're all the same. They're all just a combination of chess, dice, ping pong, and bunkum. And he was trying to make stuff that was not like that. This is a game where you start life as a cell pooped out by a rat, and you go through the seven ages of man while a audio cassette with his celebrity musician friends and the actor who played Doctor Who are kind of chanting and singing songs. It's a psychedelic experience. It's not really focused on gameplay. It was ahead of its time that way as well. Like, nobody blinks now if you release a high concept indie art game, which is very thin on interaction. That's a thing now, but that was considered radical in when The Graveyard came out, you know, when Tale of Tales made that in the, I think, 2009 or so. It sparked a massive, like, angry debate over whether or not that was a video game. This person was doing this 20, 30 years prior. It's just amazingly ahead of its time. It's not really fun. It's more of an art piece. It's like a thing that you play and contemplate and you think about all the different themes and ideas. For me, what an amazing thing to have on the ZX Spectrum.
Pretty wild to look at, that's for sure.
I don't know if played is the right word, but I have experienced this, surprisingly. I loaded up MP3s with an emulator like 20 years ago. And I think I agree. I mean, it's like the predecessor of a lot of, you know, sort of experimental kind of single author like itch stuff today. And it's really interesting still, because even today, it's not common to see something this high concept as like a commercial video game, which this essentially was, I assume, in terms of how it was sold. So yeah, I like this as just sort of an historically interesting vote on the list, and I would put it fairly high in the first quarter somewhere. First quarter is like 5, maybe not, first half.
Yeah, I love this pick. It's another example, I think, of kind of a British game that kind of like tried to make something happen and then maybe nothing really happened as a result, but it's still a kind of a really important work. I mean, as Bennett said, maybe it really genuinely is the first like actual like art game as we know them.
Nice. Where do we want to put it?
Yeah, that's the question.
Middle for me, I would say.
Middle's fine.
I think the middle is good. It's definitely good to be on this list. It certainly is, you know, 1984 doing a lot of things that people have continued to try to do over the years.
It's definitely better than the Chaos Engine.
I see what you're doing.
I was going to say above Burnout Paradise.
I was going to say above WizKid, but so it's around about there. The actual specifics are up to you, I guess.
That's fine. Let's go one above WizKid.
One above WizKid. Everyone cool with that?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. You are last up, Frank. What is the final game on our list?
No pressure. I am down to games I don't particularly like, but I have played. Like, that's where my list stands right now.
I know.
Like, can I therefore mention the franchise that we haven't added that has to surely be added in case it's on your list?
Yeah.
How is there not a Dizzy game on this list?
Let's do it. Okay. Which one? Fantastic Dizzy? Let's go Fantastic Dizzy.
Fantastic. I was hoping Prince of the Yolkfolk. Prince of the Yolkfolk's the insert.
Oh, wait. I thought that was Prince of the Yolkfolk. Oh, you're right. Prince of the Yolkfolk is the other one. It had a different name on the NES, which is where I played it. Yeah, Prince of the Yolkfolk. I agree. So I don't know what to really say about these games. What I appreciate about them is that I feel like it's a template that you could make a new entry in like once a month if you really wanted to, and they kind of did for a minute. It's a platform game with a series of locks and keys that are instead items that you pick up, like pieces of meat and trolls that want to eat meat, you know, is kind of the extent of the puzzles. Like, the puzzles aren't super hard to solve, but the fact that they exist gives you some drive to do the platforming. It's not very good. Dizzy's really slippery in just about all the games. I mean, you'll jump and it'll just kind of keep rolling and then roll himself into the water and die instantly a lot.
Yeah.
They're not good, but I am very charmed by them. And they're, at least in my mind, extremely British. Like, when I think British games, I think Dizzy. You know, I think we were joking about it at the top of the show. Most British games are just blobby looking guy jumping around. And
this is the ultimate that.
I don't know if Dizzy's like the first, but he leaned into it really early on. I believe they made him an egg because that was the shape that read really well when it flipped in the air. So it's just, that's what he is. He's an egg. That's my take on Dizzy.
I think this series is really interesting. It's made by twins, the Oliver twins, who were coding on the Amstrad, so that had a better keyboard, and then porting it over to other systems. I think reading between the lines, it sort of sounds like they were being exploited by their parents because they were making so much money, but it's an important series. There was a new one that came out just recently, Fantasy World Dizzy, I think it's called. It's actually really good. Very much the same gameplay, but beautiful pixel art and really well done.
What I like about it is that it's designed by the Olivers, like on paper, but the fans now know how to make a Dizzy game so well that they made one that's pretty indistinguishable and from what a real one would be.
And you say on paper, I mean, you can go to a museum and see the original graph paper that they did all of their level design on.
Literally
it's
on
kind
paper.
Of amazing. Just pencil and paper, honestly. It's like one twin feverishly sort of scribbling in graph paper and the other one putting the ones and zeros in the computer. There's something kind of romantic about it that I really love.
I always pictured them just having a very synchronous brain together.
Yeah.
And just sitting down and being able to plop these games out without hardly having to communicate with each other.
Yeah. These games are frustrating as hell. People think I make frustrating games. They just do not. Yeah, it's not even the same league.
Don't mess with Dizzy.
I mean, I would say that the reason I mentioned Prince of the Yolkfolk is it's the shortest and easiest of them all, and the most obvious in terms of puzzle design. Like, I think that There's a strong argument to be made for Fantasy World Dizzy, which is the third Dizzy game. The first two are not really playable at all. Treasure Island Dizzy famously gives you one life, so it's basically completely unplayable, because almost every time you just immediately roll into the first pit of water and just die. But Fantasy World Dizzy is the one I think that starts where you're in a dungeon, there is a fire, and there's a jug with water in it, and you have to like use the jug with water to put out the fire, and then that sets the tone for the game, and it's early, you know, teaching the player how to play the game level design. And Prince of the Oak Folk, I think, is the one that's designed by Big Red Software, so not actually by the Oliver Twins. And I'm now revealing how much I know about the Dizzy series just off the top of my head somehow. It's the one that I remember playing through and being like, oh, I finally get these. It's a fun game in its own way. And you can't argue with the fact that Dizzy was basically the king of the video game mascots for a period of time in the UK before, you know, something as ridiculous as a hedgehog or a plumber. I mean, by comparison to an egg, I mean, you guys in Japan and America, you guys are crazy, you know?
Yeah. Where are we putting it, this last game?
Not super high for me.
No.
But still, they're interesting.
I mean, better than
above Sonic R.
I would say below Sonic R.
It's above Sonic R.
Below Sonic R, come
on. Sonic R has an Eggman in it.
True.
Not the original.
Yeah.
I would put it one above Sonic R just for its Britishness. You know, this
that's
needs to
three
be
three of us saying that.
That's yeah. true. And there's no room for deference here. It's too small a window. However, this is our list, and this is your last opportunity to rearrange it.
Before I rearrange, just a quick, like, if for some reason Prince of the Oak Folk sounds interesting to you, I think the easiest way to play it would be an NES ROM, and there it's called Dizzy the Adventurer. It has a different name. So that's all.
All right.
Well, I think we should put Sonic R at the top.
That's not happening, but I would be open to switching Elite and TXK if everyone's cool with that.
To make a cooler list, I think that is a reasonable thing to do.
Yeah, I'm totally happy with that. TXK is amazing, and Jeff Minter deserves the props for keeping it real all this time, you know?
And it's real British.
I am also okay with if we want to drop Arkham Knight and Grand Theft Auto 4 a little lower.
I think
they're okay.
Yeah,
I think they are.
I'm okay with Grand Theft Auto going lower, but I like Arkham Knight where it is.
Same.
Yeah, we could put it below Wipeout.
I like that. Wipeout. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I think in the name of trying to be cool, but not trying to be too cool, I think we could just leave it where it is.
Okay.
All right.
That's another approach.
We seem kind of split on that, so maybe we'll put it one above Wipeout.
All right.
Drop it down one ranking, but still above a Brandon game.
Head Over Heels is a better game than Grand Theft Auto 4.
It's a more British game than Grand Theft Auto 4.
I think that's true.
Brandon, you are the emblem of anti-establishment and always have been, so it would be a betrayal if all of your games were at the top. The fact that your games are so concentrated near the bottom of the list means that you still get to be the iconoclast.
No, you know, actually, my games are entirely spread throughout. I've got number one, like number seven or whatever, number 11 or 12, and then 13 or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be clear, the ones that Brandon that are higher on the list are the ones we agreed with him on. The only iconoclastic thing is trying to force a Sonic game up on us.
Yeah, well, there was going to be more of that, but I realized it wasn't going to go well for me. I had Outrun 2006 on here.
Yeah.
I had Sonic 3D Blast.
See, that's the same. I didn't put that on the list either, because again, the arcade game already existed, so led by a Japanese team doesn't count, even though 2006 is amazing.
Yep. I mean, Sumo did a lot of work on that. I mean, it was really them, but
not
still.
To disrespect Brandon even more, but I'd like to scooch Pipe Mania up one.
No, Alien. No. You will regret it when you play Alien Resurrection.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I promise.
So, is everyone cool with the list as it stands?
I think so.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with that. I mean, obviously, Sense World of Soccer is number one in my heart, but
sure.
I'll have to allow it to be what it is in reality.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, it's like 7 out of 10 on the list, which is where all the best games lie.
That's right.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Because often in these lists, like one that's actually best isn't actually top because certain people are just sort of obstinate, you know?
Yeah. I don't know who you're talking about. If you are on the Patreon or you're a member of forums.insertcredit.com, you can see the full list over there. But here it is. Number 20, Where Time Stood Still. Number 19, Sonic R. Number 18, Dizzy, Prince of the Yolk Folk. Number 17, Pipe Mania. Number 16, Alien Resurrection. Number 15, School Day. Number 14, Populous. Number 13, WizKid, The Story of WizBall 2. Number 13, Deus Ex Machina. Number 12, The Chaos Engine. Number 11, Burnout Paradise. Number 10, Damocles. Number 9, Sensible World of Soccer. Number 8, Wipeout 2097. Number 7, Grand Theft Auto 4. Number 6, Head Over Heels. Number 5, Batman Arkham Knight. I messed up the counting somewhere. Number 3, Lemmings. Number 2, Elite. Number 1, TXK. Why don't you figure out which number I accidentally said twice? We'll retake this after the show. Just plug that in there.
Just leave it that way.
Whatever.
It's British humor, we're going to say.
Esper, you figure it out. You know what? Let's not do recommendations this week. We just recommended you a bunch of games you probably have never played. Seek out the emulators or whatever you have to do to steal them. Does anyone have anything they'd like to say to our listeners to check out of their like personal projects before we sign off?
I would like for people to go on to itch.io, find out whether you own Gunhouse already through one of the many bundles, because I think 2 million people own Gunhouse, but on itch, only 12,000 people have actually downloaded it and played it. So check if you already own it and give it a shot if you do.
Good advice.
The only thing I wanted to mention was that if you follow exp.zine on Twitter, I often post my game review things up there from every game I've finished, which is a Tumblr.
They're fun to read.
And I love people reading those and having opinions.
I enjoy those a lot.
Everygame.tumblr.com. Like people reading those and holding opinions back to me. So please enjoy.
Bennett, you got anything?
I got nothing to plug. New games, super secret. Can't tell ya.
Ooh, shh.
But you heard it here first. Game developer is making a new game.
Yeah.
We got the scoop.
Put that on your game blog.
I recommend trying to figure out what Bennett's new game is.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I think Frank recommended trying to pirate Dizzy. That's also a good thing you can do. Right. Here are some of my recommendations.
Let's pirate I happen to have Dizzy. A few.
Well, I'd like to recommend that if you're listening to this show on any platform where you can subscribe to or review podcasts, that you do that. You can also go to patreon.com/insertcredit, where you could become a patron to submit your own questions, get our regular episodes one day early, and even access monthly bonus episodes and other exclusive content, such as our full lists, which we'll probably be posting there. You can also join us on forums.insertcredit.com. And follow us on Twitter for our own personal updates and projects. The show is at Insert Credit. I'm Alex Jaffe. Frank is at Frank Cifaldi. Brandon is at Necrosofty. Matthew is at Matthew Kumar with one T. Bennett is at EFOD. This show is produced by Esper Quinn with music by John Philip Sousa. Once more, I'm Alex Jaffe.
I'm Frank Cifaldi.
I'm Brandon Sheffield.
Bennett Foddy.
I'm Matthew Kumar.
And your game has now been saved.
I just wanted to say that I actually felt that list was really, really good, and I'm really happy with
the
conversation.
Yeah,
because we got lots of weird old Britishy things, but also like stuff people would actually play, and we all talked sensibly about the stuff. There's a few things that I really wanted to get in though, like or would have wanted to talk about, like UFO Enemy Unknown. We didn't include, which is big classic for me. And
Oops. That would have been a good one.
And Micro Machines 2 Turbo Tournament, another classic.
Really good one.
But, you know, overall, like, really solid.
Yeah.
Great job, everybody.
I mean, there was no room for UFO Enemy Unknown. We had to get Sonic R on there.
Hey, Sonic R rules.